Everybody wants.
And we are back with alternative milk with your intergalactic milkman, JD. And today I have
Mighty Morgan. That's Dr. Morgan.
Dr. Morgan.
As the Mighty Thor said.
We are reviewing Thor, Love, and Thunder with our Thunder thoughts.
Okay. Well, we finally got a chance to see Thor, Love, and Thunder, which is the fourth installment in the Thor solo films. Mm-hmm. And this movie was how many years after Ragnarok? So I saw somewhere that they said five, but five felt like a little bit of a stretch. But then I thought maybe that might be right because Infinity War came out in 2018. So I do think it may have been about 5 years ago.
Yeah, Thor Ragnarok came out in 2017. So yeah, about 5 years ago.
I still can't wrap my brain around that, how time flies and how many more movies we've had since then in the MCU. And so like at the end of Thor Ragnarok, we saw him lose his eye. We saw his home be destroyed.
Lost his hammer.
Yeah, so much had happened in the last movie. And so here we are now in 2022 and we get to see what Thor is up to post the events of Endgame.
Yeah, this is going to be, for everybody listening, a spoiler conversation on our thoughts. So if you haven't seen the movie or you just really want to be spoiled, this is the place for you.
Yep.
And as she was saying, Ragnarok, as everybody remembers, none of that mattered in the movie. None of the things he learned really mattered. And most of the people died.
Yeah.
And then we had the next movie. And then we had the Avengers. Yay, Avengers. But, you know, quick synopsis. I mean, basically, it's just Gorg, big rock monster, telling the story of Thor, Love and Thunder, of Thor learning what it means to be a god.
I forgot to tell you this. Korg, before people here think Korg. You're saying Gore, because Gore is the villain. You were, like, mashing them up together.
Okay, what's the villain's name? Gore?
Gore. G-O-R-R.
Okay, Gore. Yeah. Okay, Borg?
Korg.
Korg. Korg
is the Taika Waititi's rock monster.
Yes, rock monster.
Well, not
man.
Monster, but he's an alien.
Yeah, he's an alien. He's just different. Well, monster rock alien monster man telling the story of Thor, basically doing his space adventures, having to save people, having to beat Bor the God Killer, and reunited with Jane Foster, and she dies. And that's pretty much the whole movie.
I guess. Well, there's a lot that happens. One thing I will say, I was really pleasantly surprised to see that it had a 2-hour runtime. So I thought we were definitely going to go in there for a pretty long movie. And so I would still say it felt a little bit too long, but I was happy. I think about an hour into the movie, I checked my watch and I was like, oh no, we have an hour and a half left of this. And then when I saw that it was only 2 hours, I was like, okay, I can make it through this. So
yeah, for the story they were telling, it was definitely parts in the middle where, like, this is rare, a lot of lull going on. But I guess we can start off. Anything stood out for you or anything in the movie? Any standout characters or anybody you like?
I know I saw a lot of people say that they thought Gore was a really good villain, and I would agree in terms of, like, his motivation was really good. And I really liked the plot that they kind of sprinkled throughout the movie around this idea of disillusionment with the gods, whether that be Gore, like, losing his daughter and meeting the god that he had been basically like a prophet of and worshiping, and probably directly related to, like, him being in that position that he was, that life or death position, and kind of being jaded by the experience, and then of seeing Zeus and having a similar experience of Zeus. And then I would even argue, like, us and the people of Asgard having a similar experience in Thor of humans putting their hope and faith into these gods and finding out that they're very, very flawed and they are not necessarily connected to humanity and mankind. And so I thought that was a really interesting concept. I really wish they had dug a lot deeper into it, but I think that they were getting at something that was really, really interesting for a movie franchise that is about a god. And I feel like this was probably one of the first times they really grappled with that p- part of his identity since the first movie.
Yeah, I definitely agree. This might have had one of the best just cold openings of any MCU movie.
No jokes.
It was just a straight mini story of how Gore got the sword. Now it got kind of a little weird with the sword just kind of just appeared in his hand, but for what they were telling, it definitely seemed to fit. Just how he was so defeated when he finally met his god. And for his god just nonchalantly say, you don't matter. Nothing you did mattered. Your daughter died. She goes nowhere. None of your people went anywhere. And for him to have to grapple with that, such a serious tone, serious villain. I love what they were doing. I'm not sure how he fits into the movie, but in terms of his character, I definitely enjoyed that aspect of it. What is the point of gods?
Yeah, and I would definitely say another strength of Gore was he was scary. He was intimidating. I think his presence with the shadow monsters and how he was kind of like able to teleport a little bit whenever there was a scene where they were interacting with him and he teleported, I found myself being like, oh, wow, is he gonna pop up behind someone and stab him in the back? Which is kind of what happened with Tessa Thompson's character. So I thought it was interesting to have a villain that was compelling in terms of like their motivation to kill the gods, but then also just like smart in terms of his plan to trap the kids and intimidating and scary. And I think that is just one of your benefits. As I think we've talked about on the show before around having a person as your villain. And I think that's why Killmonger is a strong villain. I think that's why, Wanda is, I wouldn't say Wanda was a strong villain, but I think she was an effective villain. And that's going back to Civil War, I think that's why, now I'm going to get his name wrong, Baron Zemo or Captain Zemo?
Zemo.
Zemo. Yeah. I think that's why he was, even though he didn't physically fight anybody, but he was an interesting villain because he was compelled by a personal tragedy and he just wanted to get revenge on the Avengers. It wasn't that he was trying to cast a spell to end the whole entire world or anything like that. He just had a personal beef and he actually succeeded in that movie. Mm-hmm. So I always appreciate when Marvel is able to kind of bring their villains down to size and you get to see the actors acting against other human beings and also a good actor with Christian Bale. I think having a good performance and asking more of his co-stars. And I would also imagine it's probably just easier to act against a person than a whole bunch of tennis balls or whatever. So yeah, I've definitely enjoyed him as a villain.
Yeah. And just another person villain, yeah. Human villain that I just really, really enjoyed from the MCU. From the first Iron Man. I can't think of his name that played Tony Stark's father's best friend.
Oh, Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. Jeff Bridges character. I definitely enjoyed that. But in terms of another character that I really enjoy in the movie and their whole arc, I would say Jane Foster.
Yeah.
The new mighty Thor, yeah. All that good stuff.
Dr. Jane Foster.
Mm-hmm. Great scene. Just seeing how her character, how she had to overcome. She had diagnosed with cancer. It was stage 4. We're like, of course, everybody's seen the trailer. So we know, like, we all assumed the hammer was going to help her in some way.
I had no clue.
You didn't see it in the trailers?
I mean, I knew she became the Mighty Thor, but yeah. I didn't know that she was sick or I didn't know anything about how she came to be.
I didn't know she was sick, but I knew she gets Thor powers, and when I saw that she was sick, I just assumed okay, when she gets the Thor powers, mm-hmm. she's gonna magically get better, which she did not. And I enjoyed that part of her character. She had gained all this power, the power of God, but it still wasn't enough to help her physically get better when she was in her regular form. And she had to self-sacrifice at the end of the movie. Like, I'm going to sacrifice the power of Thor if it means we can help these children and help gods like Thor.
Yeah, not even like, the power of Thor, or life.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was just great character development, just seeing her interaction with Thor. I also felt like they just had way better chemistry. Had way better chemistry in this movie than they did in the first two Thor movies. They played it for jokes a little bit when it was showing their relationship, showing it how it developed after the first Thor movie, how they're going on dates.
I appreciate they did that. They must have heard the criticism from Endgame. It's like, no, you can't just reintroduce a love interest after like 10 years, and we've seen this person move on. Like, you need to give us a little bit more. So I appreciate that little montage.
It made me feel like, oh, okay, they were a real relationship. Because when I watched Thor 2, The Dark World, like, I never believed they were in a relationship together. Mm-hmm. But I did in this movie, and I thought it was played really well.
Yeah, I also really like Jane's character. And I would say, as somebody who was okay with her in the first two Thors, I think a big thing for me was just that they didn't have any chemistry. And I think her character being, you know, a scientist was definitely evident in the movies, but I think I didn't really connect with it as much as opposed to this movie. I think, and I know you've heard me give this whole speech before, so pardon me, but we recently saw Jurassic World Dominion. And so we were talking about the comparison between the character arc of Jane and then the character arc of Bryce Dallas Howard's character in Jurassic World, and how she goes from being this very like smart, competent, powerful, obviously like driven woman to, in the second movie, is like an activist, and she's gotten more humanity and gotten more compassionate. In the third movie, she saw some really cool action scenes, but she basically is like not, she doesn't have any personal goals outside of being with Owen and being like a mother figure to the daughter. And so that was disappointing to see. And I think in this movie, it does a much better job of reconciling like how you can, a woman character can be strong, but she can still be vulnerable and feminine. Like, she still is able to admit that she loves Thor and she wants to be with Thor. She can use her skills, and she doesn't have to give up her identity. Like, we see her brag on the fact that the person next to her, Kimo, is reading her book. We see her use her intelligence to help them figure out how to channel the Bifrost and all these types of things. And then ultimately, I think at the end, you see her get this ultimatum of, like, do I stay and not join the fight and maybe have a chance to beat cancer and be with Thor? Or do I get to have this one last adventure and kind of go out on my own terms? And I think it was just a very Jane Foster thing to do. Like, I think it was very true to the character, who always was really smart, really bright, really passionate, up for adventure, was not the type to sit on the sideline. And so I really appreciated that. And for me to go from at the beginning of the movie not wanting her in the movie at all, not looking forward to the Mighty Thor, to being at the end when she has her line and she says, well, I'm not Lady Thor. Like, you can call me the Mighty Thor, or you can call me Dr. Jane Foster. That really got to me. You know, I like to choke up in powerful women scenes. Like, I choked up in the battle scene in Wonder Woman. And then, of course, in Black Panther several times. But I was like, I was like, oh, I'm a little choked up. Like, that was an effective moment for me versus the us girls will get it done scenes in other Marvel movies where they're just huge eye roll moments. Like, that's not cool.
This one, it just seemed like a natural progression for her character. Like, she made it to this moment. She's fighting the big bad, and she finally came up with her catchphrase that she's been working on the whole movie, and it just seemed natural. Like,
true to who she was. Like, it made sense. Like, a big argument when women identify characters, and I would agree a lot of them, is it doesn't, their behaviors and things don't make sense. The characters don't feel like real women. They feel like they're written to serve a purpose or to like check a feminism checkbox, and nobody likes them. The people who are like would be embracing of a woman character and people who don't want a woman character, nobody is left happy. And I feel like with this one, they did a way better job. And I would probably give that credit to Natalie Portman, because I think she's always had a lot more say in her role in terms of the Marvel movies, and I don't think she would have portrayed a character that was just gonna like sexy pose on the side. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, it definitely seemed like she embraced the character and put her own flair in it. Like you said, it wasn't like, okay, it's just gonna be a weird ass shot behind her as she's walking. Like, no, all the scenes made sense. How she posed made sense for the movie. Just a good character.
And I would argue that she was still like this balance, right? Like, you as a woman, you can be, she was still feminine, she was still sexy, she was still vulnerable, she still, you know, was interested in a romantic relationship with her partner, but then she was also really strong, really capable, really smart, this other fully fleshed out being, and it didn't feel forced, you know. And so I really appreciated that. I also appreciated that she died at the end of the movie, because what I didn't want to see was Thor give the mantle to the mighty Thor, and then the whole movie be more so a Jane Foster movie than a Thor movie. And I appreciate Marvel for following through and actually killing her, because it made sense for the story they were writing for her to die at the end. And I'm glad they didn't do that thing that, like, I don't want to spoil anything, but I almost said a Stranger Things spoiler, but other shows do where they kill a character and they find a way to bring him back, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely a finale for her character, because at the end you see her in the post-credit scene go to Valhalla.
Yeah.
This is the conclusion of her character. There is no more, any more earthly adventures for her, and that's fine. It's okay for a character to gracefully bow out of the franchise, just like what happened with Tony Stark.
Kill people, Marvel. Like, we already had all these things where we brought people back through time travel, or they're, you know, obviously Wanda, spoilers for Doctor Strange, I'll say skip ahead 15 seconds if you don't want to hear this, but obviously Wanda is going to come back in some form of the multiverse. Like, this is not the last we're going to see her, because her death was so anticlimactic. We know she's going to come back and redeem herself. So, you know, for every character that you bring back, you need to have a Black Widow. You need to have a Jane where you kill some people. A Tony Stark where they're dead and they stay dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Any other characters that kind of stood out or that you liked in the movie? I have one real
quick. Sure, go ahead.
I enjoyed, I'm going to get his name wrong, Gorg?
Korg.
Korg. I can't pronounce it.
Taika Waititi's character.
Yeah. Big rock man. I enjoyed that it was refreshing to, he was pretty much the narrator for the whole movie. Beginning of the movie, we see him telling children the story of the mighty Thor. He kept it light. It was funny when it needed to be. We learned interesting things about his background, of his character, how rock people are made on his planet. We even get his god showing up when they had that scene where they're in the Pantheon of Gods.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, it was nice character development for somebody who was really a third tertiary character throughout all his appearances. I think he showed up in Ragnarok and maybe a little bit in Avengers Endgame, but never really a big character. You know what I'm saying? Just in the background. This was a real cool moment for him.
Yeah. As far as I was okay with Korg. I probably could deal with a little bit less Korg, but I really liked the return of the Asgardian actors, played by Matt Damon and the third Hemsworth brother and Sam Neill.
Oh, yeah.
And when they worshipped to Tessa Thompson and asked about, could they start working on a play? I was like, I'm glad to see that gag come back. And I feel like that was one of the uses of humor in the movie that I felt was, like, appropriate and actually funny. And so I enjoyed that. Lastly, not a character, but I thought it was cool when they went to, I'm blanking on the term they had for it, but the land of where all the gods were gathering. I thought it was cool that we got to see a whole bunch of different gods and different depictions, and you can tell they took time into, like, some of them were real people, some of them were CGI, but it was really cool to see just a whole bunch of different cultures represented. And then we kind of came home and watched the YouTube video just to kind of see, like, oh, this one was from this culture, this one was from that culture. So that was cool just to see, you know, that Marvel paid attention to that, because they didn't have to do that. They could have just made them all Greek gods and called it a day. So I thought that was, or Greek and Norse or European gods and called it a day. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's definitely a scene where you would have to pause through and see, like, oh, do I recognize them? Because just seeing a person go through talking about, oh, I think that's the Egyptian god from Moon Knight, or I think that might be somebody representing Black Panther. That's cool that they might have had all those little background things in there.
I think there were 50 or 51 different deities there. So that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I think one aspect of the movie that I really, really enjoyed, and this is back to Gore's character, just the aspect of the gods. Like, what does it mean to be a god if you don't care about your people? Like, why do they exist? I think that's and it's a question that they really didn't touch upon in the movie, but it was brought up. That's the whole point of why Gore went on his mission to kill all the gods. He was a god killer because once his god says we abandon the people that worship us, we really don't care, you guys are insignificant. And then that's reiterated when Thor talks to Zeus. It's like, yeah, why does it matter? And then it makes, as the audience, I think you really need to question, like, what does Thor really do for the people that worship him? Not to say he's not just going on these cool space adventures, but it really brings it to question, especially I think he might have even thought of it like, well, what am I really doing instead of going on doing cool things around the world, around space?
I think they were almost there, but they missed the point. And I think they missed the point of what could have been a really interesting, compelling argument to make in terms of, we see Thor having this realization that he's lonely and he doesn't have anyone or anything to love. And so throughout the whole movie, I found myself like, okay, you have the Asgardian people who you clearly seem disconnected with. You have the Guardians of the Galaxy who you clearly seem disconnected with. And I thought what was going to happen was Thor was going to discover, you know, especially once he found out Jane was dying, of like, oh, I can love my people because I am, after all, a god and I do have people. I'm going to love them and serve them and receive love back from them and actually, like, be a good god and be a, you know, be a corrective. And so it was disappointing to see them not go in that direction and give him the kind of niece or whatever. And of course, that's probably a setup for some other big plot line that we don't know, that I don't know about. But I think they had an opportunity to actually have a pull all those strings together and give him a deeper meaning and really do some exploration of this idea of, yeah, Thor's been on the adventures the whole time, but he's actually a god. I mean, he's an alien, but he's a god. And that's really cool. And I think, you know, anytime they really let Thor get below surface level deep, he's a good character. Like in Ragnarok, when we see him at the end of the movie lose so much, in Infinity War, when we see how he's just so serious in that movie, and at the beginning of Endgame, well, the end of Endgame, when we see him fighting, or at the beginning when we see him cut off Thanos' head, and at certain points in this movie, like, when they let Chris Hemsworth do dramatic, he be in his bag. Like, Thor is a really interesting character because we're talking about mythology at the end of the day. Like, it's some really interesting stories and things there. And then they cannot do that because they have to give you joke after joke after joke after joke.
I think we're transitioning to things that we didn't enjoy about the movie right now.
Yeah. And I mean, I think anytime, it's like the same, my biggest gripe with Thor as a character is you give him this really cool haircut, you have him lose his eye in this really traumatic way, and then the next movie was like, oh, well, here's another eye, boom, and he's a joke for this, he gains the weight and then he's a joke because he's fat for a whole bunch of movies. It's like, I guess, but we could have had a really interesting study about grief and guilt, and we still could have had moments of levity and Endgame, but you had something really rich there. And it's like they get scared, they back away from it. Anything too serious, they run away from it.
Yeah, it was definitely a couple. They went by 8 jokes too many with Thor in the movie, especially the running gag with how he was jealous of Jane Foster, how she had the hammer, and how he wanted the hammer back. And every time he tried to talk to the hammer or something, Stormbreaker came coming up. And it was cute. You do that 2 times in the movie and it's great. But when you do it 5 times or so in the movie, it's like, I got the point the first 2 times. I didn't need it to keep coming back now.
I think the lack of continuity, like when we go back and we look at the Thor franchise, the lack of continuity is going to be this biggest downfall, because you have times where you see Thor be a very, very skilled, strong, competent fighter. You have times where you see Thor demonstrate that he cares about people. You also have times when you see Thor kind of like in the first Avengers movie, he goes to get Loki. He tries to take him from the Avengers. He's like, you know, he kept distance from them at all times. Or when the adventure was over, he would go back into space and he really didn't have much to do with S.H.I.E.L.D. on Earth. And so he always kind of kept them at a distance, but we never saw Thor just be like a bumbling idiot. And even in Ragnarok, he was like maybe like a little bit overconfident and he had more humor, which was fine. But in this one, it's like he's just totally unaware of his presence and how he comes across to other people until the story doesn't want him to be. Then he's like super serious and he really gets it and he's back to fighting and everything else. And it's like, well, this is kind of giving me whiplash because, you know, is this person an idiot or is this person a really skilled, competent, powerful god?
Yeah, it was definitely weird, especially the scene where he's talking like to all the people of Asgard, the parents who lost their children to Gore. And it's like he all of a sudden he didn't know what to say. He was, like you said, bumbling around. And it's like it completely contradicts all the progress made in Thor 2 and at the end of Ragnarok, where he was a competent leader. And I know there was time in between.
Who led them to New Asgard.
Yes, he led them there. Like, and I know there was maybe like those 5 years when he got fat, he became Fat Thor, and he wasn't the best. But it's like, you were alive for thousands of years learning from your father. Like, you forgot. That's true. Yeah, you forgot how to be a leader right now. Which
was the whole Thor movie was about him learning how to be mature and think about others and required him to sacrifice his life, you know, like, make the sacrifice for that town of people. Also, at the end of Ragnarok, we see him how seriously he takes protecting his people because mm-hmm. he does save them. He loses an eye to save them. He loses, you know, he thinks he loses Loki to save them, and he makes sure that they're safe. And then we see him at the end of Infinity War and Endgame grapple with this guilt of losing half the planet for 5 years and how that destroyed him. So then why in this movie would some villain come in and take all the children of your village, so this village that you fought to save in Ragnarok, and half of them disappeared and you get them all back in Endgame, and now this happens a third time basically and you're like, oh, I don't know, you guys are upset about this? It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you now all of a sudden not know what to do and not care? Like, you don't even have a line of him saying like, oh wow, this is not gonna happen again, or not on my watch, or I'm not gonna, you know, last time I didn't see Hela coming, I didn't see Thanos coming, but I'm gonna get the kids. Nothing. And you can still have a lighthearted movie, but I think you need a character to be consistent.
Yeah,
you know?
Literally the last of your people and the children were just snatched. And I'm not gonna say he was just cracking jokes, but they wrote it so it seemed lighthearted. Like, no, this is a serious moment right now.
They wrote it like he couldn't understand why it was a serious situation. They wrote it like he was more concerned about the gods being killed and how that was unfair than the human beings. And that's yet another reason why you could have him learn a lesson about how the human lives... Well, no, because he knows the human lives are important because he cared about Thanos. See,
They were Asgardians. They were...
But he cared when Thanos killed half the galaxy. Yeah. So it's like, when you start to pull a thread, everything kind of falls apart with Thor's character. And that's why, you know, to compare, like, you have a Tony Stark, you have a Captain America. They have pillars of their personality, their motivation, their goals. And as much as people complain about Bruce Wayne, that's why it's so important that his parents die, because that is a pillar of who he is as a person, his values, the decisions that he makes, and all those different types of things. But with Thor, because it's so much writing and unwriting and doing and undoing and reintroducing and changing a tone and all this other type of stuff, there you can't say this is what Thor's pillars are. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have anything like that.
Yeah, I feel like Thor is probably of most of the main MCU characters who have their own movies is the most comic bookish in the fact that every movie is a new it's like a new showrunner has the has the comic book, so they kind of start his character over. It's not a complete reset, but in terms of his emotional maturity and certain things, like how he handles the scene, it's like it'll reset halfway back.
He's like learning the same lesson over and over again, almost. Or
There's no advancement, and I know that's probably for it makes it easier to write the next movie, but it's like, well, did none of that really matter in the last one?
Then you go back and those movies don't age well. And I think the Thor movies are the ones that probably age the worst in all the MCU, because they just feel so different and they don't feel like they connect to each other other than, well, Thor and Asgard. But like you said, in tone and motivation, you know, that'd be like one movie of Captain America. All he cares about is Bucky. And then the next one, he's like, me and Bucky were never friends. I never really liked him that much. And then the third one, it was like, oh, that was actually my brother. You know, like, and I think Thor is even a wilder of a difference and change. But it's like, we need to understand, what is Thor's deal? What does he care about? What does he not care about? Mm-hmm. What is he, you know, we don't know anything about him. And I feel like the writing was like, half of the story was trying to pull this deeper Thor out of there. And then the other half of the story was trying to pull for more jokes and more comedy and trying to keep us away from that exploration. And I think you can do both. Like, we've seen Marvel handle serious topics and issues. Like, literally, the first Iron Man was a critique of, like, capitalism and
the war complex
and everything else like that. You know, and then we have one where we talked about Tony Stark being an alcoholic, and we had one where we talked about Tony Stark being traumatized from the Avengers, and there were still jokes peppered in there, you know? And so I think it's just disappointing because, you know, from watching the fight scenes in this movie, you're reminded like, oh yeah, Thor is really, really powerful. Thor is really, really cool when y'all let Thor fight. And when the lightning eyes and all that type of stuff like that, he's a really cool hero, and I feel like he should be bigger than what he is. But I think the reason why he'll never maybe like crack that pantheon of big superhero characters is because his character is just not there.
I think it's hard when they for the longest it kept going back and forth to what Thor was also throughout the movies. At first it's like they're in a different dimension, the nine realms. Then it was like, well, it's more of just a different planet, and they're just aliens from a planet, and they just came to Earth sometimes. Now it's like, well, actually, they are gods, they were worshipped. So now it's like every movie is something different with Thor on how they should be perceived to the people in the movie.
Yeah, like if you asked like a 12-year-old, tell me Peter Parker story. No matter which version of Spider-Man they saw, of the three Spider-Man groups they saw, they would be able to tell you more or less what Spider-Man is about and what his biggest conflicts are and what motivates him, what type of person he is. Same thing about Batman. No matter what version of Batman you see, you're going to be able to write, like if you compare three people's responses, three different film series, you would pretty much get a lot of the same overlap. I think with Thor, if we're not even talking about different series, we're talking about four movies. If you ask four different people to tell you about Thor, you would have four different things. Mm-hmm. And that is the biggest shortcoming of the movie. And I know like a lot of people said that the humor was grating and dumbing Thor down was grating. And I would agree. Like, I don't think you need to dumb Thor down to put him next to Jane Foster and Valkyrie, who looks so much more competent in comparison to him, and have them kind of like bumble around and make mistakes and be like, oh, we're really messing this up, ha ha ha. Meanwhile, these children are like terrified and scared and everything. Like, it just felt very like, you want to write a comedy, do a Marvel comedy, but don't make Thor your comedy series. But then you want to have these like really serious elements in there.
Yeah, like for all this comedy, this was a super, too much of a super serious villain. Like, this villain was disillusioned by gods, and now he's going around killing gods throughout the universe. If you to say that and then to see all the things that Thor was doing and his characters and his sidekicks, it just seemed like two different things happening. It doesn't seem to mesh. I didn't like Ragnarok, but for all that joking and for Hela to be there, those two things go together. Like, you can joke with her character, because it's still like, hey, I'm also a god and I'm playing off your character, everything that was happening. Like, this guy, he has so much trauma to even try to make that relatable. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think if I'm remembering correctly now, it's been 5 years. And I've probably only seen it one time since then. But at the end of Thor Ragnarok, like, when the movie shifts into a more action-oriented, serious tone, it stays there. And, you know, that doesn't mean that there aren't, like, a couple of jokes at the end, but we have people sacrificing their lives. We have, you know, we have big action set pieces. We have, like, real serious stakes. And so we don't have to have Thor, like, literally go from being dumb and not thinking about things to being super smart and competent again and over here and over there. Like, we shift tone and the viewers are able to move with that tone and recognize, like, oh, this is a serious part of the movie, so it's going to be a little bit more serious right now.
I was about to say, well, when I tell you I was so confused when Thor all of a sudden can give the power of Thor to a bunch of people, I'm like, all right, I'm not mad at you being able to do this, but we fought a whole war against Thanos twice.
Wakandans couldn't have got that power for just 30 minutes.
30 minutes. We probably would have won the first time you would have did this.
But I think somebody had an idea of that visual of him giving the kids powers and them flying through the air and them fighting and everything. Fighting the little shadow monsters was cool, and it was cool.
Looked cool.
But didn't make any sense. No. And I think when people talk about, like, a lot of the issues with Phase 4, this is a good example of it. Like, it just feels very disjointed, and it feels like you're creating more questions. Like, okay, we saw some Celestials in this movie, and I'm like, oh, wait, how do they tie into all this? Like, there's a God killer going around, and the Celestials are not getting involved in this. You know, like, what the hell were the Guardians of the Galaxy going to do if they bumped into Gore? Like, how are they going to stop Gore? Like, what are y'all going to go help do? You know, there was just so much. Where was Doctor Strange? I guess you could argue that he was off and doing his own Multitude of Madness fighting Wanda. But, now it's like you have written such a complicated universe that it's hard to watch these movies and not ask those questions. And they never just throw out a line of, like, oh yeah, so-and-so's off-world fighting their own battles, blah, 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 or whatever. You know, so you can't help but sit back and ask these questions and pull up these threads while you're in the midst of the movie. But for sure, 100%, I was thinking to myself, well, I mean, I can think of about a million times where it'd have been really helpful to give people temporary Thor powers. Like, and I don't know if that was because of the lightning rod. I also don't want to have to go watch a Kevin Feige interview to understand it. I feel like if I need to understand it, you need to put it in the movie. Don't make me have to use supplemental materials to figure it out.
Yeah, that's also always disheartening. I have one thing where I, sure, if you don't mind me. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not jumping in. I'm the one that brought you here. a plot that they touched on, but then they almost completely dropped. It was never really relevant again. And that is Tessa Thompson's character, Valkyrie, how she's king and how she has to do all these diplomatic meetings and how she turned everything into like a basically like a tourist trap to help make money for her people. And you see like that's not making her happy. And she's taking all these pictures with all these people, and you're like, wow, man, she looks really kind of sad, but she's doing what she wants, has to do for her people. It's never touched upon that she wasn't enjoying herself in that moment. Like, it's kind of like she gets to go on an adventure. She's like, yeah, let's. Well, it wasn't like a fun adventure. Like, we have to go do this to save these children. But that element of it is just, it was just gone. And like, maybe they touch on it in another movie, but it was weird to introduce it. And to have not even to mention it or bring any almost resolution to it.
It was weird because then it was like a line toward the end of the movie when she was talking to Jane. And she was like, oh yeah, I like being king. I love being here. I love my people. But it was like, but that montage made it seem like you were, I think maybe they were trying to convey like, oh, she was bored and she wanted an adventure. I don't think they did a good enough job because it read to me the same way it read to you. Like, oh, maybe she's going to abdicate. Maybe she doesn't want to be king anymore. And then I was like, oh, or did she just want an adventure and she's good now? Like, I don't know.
Just didn't need that scene. Like, I know there are probably plenty of other scenes that were on the cutting room floor. And this is one of those scenes that definitely just, it just shouldn't have been there, because it didn't fit. Like, you get that scene and it didn't matter again. And I'm waiting the whole entire time she came up to say something about how she likes certain parts but doesn't like these other things and wish she didn't have to do that.
Yeah, to her people. It's probably on the cutting room floor. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel like.
Because, like, why would you want to make your people a joke? Like, you were, like, literally considered almost gods to everybody on Earth, and now this happens.
What I'm trying to figure out is, why would you have an ice cream shop with the Thanos gauntlet? That would be like having a ice cream shop at the new World Trade Center Museum and having it be like an airplane logo. Like, you're talking about the glove that Thanos snapped that destroyed 50% of all life in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And if we remember, when we see Ant-Man come back in Endgame, and we see like when Steve Rogers was doing the support group, it was devastating. It was like economically devastating. It was morally devastating. We saw like there was uncollected trash and stuff. So like the world was severely impacted by this huge portion of the galaxy being snapped. And then you can only imagine, well, I think Marvel just in general kind of glazed over people being snapping back and just chose not to deal with that. But that was like a huge trauma that everybody on the planet experienced. And I'm just not sure if I don't know. I just don't know if I want to eat out of a gauntlet that snapped my husband. And then I moved on and finally got my life together. I sold our house, gave away all his clothes. And then he just snapped back.
I'm back.
In a house that we don't even own no more. Or whatever, you know.
Yeah, you know, you probably wouldn't want to own the memorabilia for that moment. That's a weird choice. It's like trying to be funny, but that's not.
It was like too meta. Like, okay, yeah, in our world, if there was really an Asgard, because the events of the movies are all fake, I could see that being a really cool thing. But I'm like, people who are somebody fans of Thanos? Because it wasn't even the Iron Man gauntlet. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know. He was the villain who killed half the planet.
Yeah, first of all, how would all these people even know what the gauntlet looked like? Like, how do we know what it was? Like, what is that supposed to be? Well, this is Thanos' gauntlet. Like, so you have to explain it to me so I can be re-traumatized there. It's like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah, I kind of don't like that they... I guess they feel like they have to acknowledge it. I feel like Doctor Strange did it a little bit better, where the, I can't remember her name, but her husband was a big fan of his. It's like, I get it. We can talk about the events in New York and we can like reference it, but I feel like it was just a little bit too much for me in this movie around like, look how commercialized the Avengers are. And it's like, I guess that's fine, but
yeah, I don't know. And I know this is off topic, but that's one of the issues I had when we watched the Black Widow movie. And her sister was like, yeah, when you do the pose. I'm like, how do you know she does that pose? Like, when will you ever see her?
When you would never know that.
Oh, my God. Like, she doesn't do it, like, every time she's just on camera, time to pose.
And I know that's just stuff for the audience, but it's like, I guess, like, I don't need you to remind me that we're watching a Marvel movie or a superhero movie. I'm aware of the movie that I came to see. I'm very much aware of the movie that I'm watching. I don't need to be reminded of that. And I recognize that we're like being very nitpicky, but I just feel like it just contributes to things that made this movie feel just like over bloated and not really like, you take away the opportunities to have meaning when you have like sight gags. You got screaming goats. We got Jane Foster joking about her catchphrase. We got Thor being dumb. You know, we have Russell Crowe doing just, I don't even know why Zeus needs to be funny, but whatever. And I don't necessarily even remember him getting any laughs in the theater.
No, he was just up there talking. I was like, okay, I know you're trying to be funny right now.
It was not, it wasn't working for me, but I know, I think I'm just overall, phase four for me has been movies that have really good parts that I really enjoy, And the parts that I really enjoy are fantastic. Like, I'm having a blast at the end of Doctor Strange. It was parts of this movie I was having a good time watching. Well, to be honest, I was bored. I was bored most of the movie, but it was parts that I really enjoyed. Spider-Man probably was the movie that I enjoyed the most overall of Phase 4. But I don't know if I can say that I just really walked away feeling like any of these movies were good so far.
Nah, I feel like we're about to wrap up, but I need to talk about this real quick. Okay. That really just really upset me.
Go for it.
And it was one of the most emotional moments. Gore's there dying. Jane's holding, Thor's holding Jane. She's dying. Thor's like, if I'm finna die, I'm finna hold my woman because you finna kill all the gods. And he changes his mind, which I completely understand. I was with it. And decides to bring back his daughter. And Thor promised him that he would take care of his daughter. And I'm like, great. That's super. I completely understand that. But then his daughter gets the power of eternity, the thing Gore was trying to get to this whole time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, just so if you're brought back by the eternity thing at the center of the universe, you now get space, weird space powers. That completely threw me for a loop. And I was like, okay, yeah. Y'all doing something. All right.
And I think, I know we... We watched a video on YouTube like a month ago, and I remember you were saying that the person was getting too in-depth, but now watching this movie, I have to agree with him, because what is the difference between a celestial, you know, a god, and then we have the multiverse, and we have alternative universes and alternative, you know, we have some people who are aliens and all these different types of things. So, I mean, at this point, I do think that it has gotten very bogged down because we have just so many characters. We have so much plot and nothing that is pulling it all together and making it feel like it's a story that is kind of slowly but surely coming together. Like in the Infinity saga, there were crumbs of Thanos. There were crumbs of like something happening in the universe. And that's easier to do when you have a more compacted, just one universe. Now we have multiple planets, multiple universes happening. Characters are dead places. Characters are alive places. Some places Captain America, Steve Rogers. Some place Captain America, or we have a... She's not Captain America. I can't think of her name. But it's so much more complicated now. And it's almost like, ugh, it's hard to enjoy. So I'm trying to figure all this stuff out. And I gotta go watch 17 YouTube videos to figure out.
And I was just going to bring that up because somebody on the YouTube video was saying, like, well, if you read this, I'm not going to say what it is because I don't know if that counts as a spoiler. But it's like, if you read this certain comic book run and it's follow-up, then you'll understand the crumbs that are leading to it. It's like, ugh, that's a lot to do. So now so after 10 years, I'm going to understand this in like 5 more years and it's all going to make sense. Like, I knew they were fighting Thanos from the beginning. The crumbs were big slices of bread. And when they introduced Thanos, I'm like, okay, that makes sense at the end of Avengers.
Yeah. Even just something as simple as us seeing him sitting on that throne out in space and him checking in, you know, every couple of movies, just to keep in the back of your mind, like, oh, we're going to have to fight Thanos one day. And to see how the Avengers Initiative, you know, Civil War, all these things came to be and tied in so well. I'm not saying that they won't. Maybe they won't surprise us and tie it in. But right now, it just feels like those pieces are all over the place. And these movies they're not doing bad. They're not doing enough good. And a comic should be a supplement. A comic should be like, oh, if I want to find out the whole story, if I really want to go in depth, but a comic should not be required reading for me to understand what's happening in the movies that I'm watching. And I think a lot of part of that too is people are going to say, well, you got to watch WandaVision. You got to watch Loki. Like, but should I have to watch Loki and WandaVision? And should I have to read comics to understand the MCU?
Yes, I'm watching a movie franchise. If that can't stand on its own, then it was a complete waste of time. It's cool for the TVs and the comics to be interconnected to the movie, but that shouldn't be it has to be able to stand by itself, or else why am I wasting my time if I can't dedicate 40 hours to watch all this supplementary stuff and then to try to buy all the comics to run 4 years ago. That's not for me.
Yeah, if it enhances the story, great. And I feel like we're the type of people who we like to leave a movie and go watch people's reviews and takes of it and get that supplemental information from YouTube, from podcasts. So, like, we enjoy doing that typically. But when it starts to feel like you have, like, it becomes homework where you have to do that to enjoy the story more. And from what I've gathered, people who watch WandaVision enjoy Doctor Strange less because they had more information. So, you know, I don't want to see the MCU go down a path where their movies feel weird because they're not connected, but they're trying to make them be connected and it feels disjointed, as opposed to, I think, like, DC realized, like, okay, we're gonna stop trying to make these movies be connected, we're just gonna make the movies and they're gonna be so different and standalone that you don't need to try to force them to overlap as much. You can just enjoy this individual story that's happening, or this series of movies, individual story that's happening. And I think that allows you to kind of turn off your brain and not be trying to fit puzzle pieces together for the whole entire movie and then end up disappointed. Mm-hmm. You're only going to be disappointed if the movie ain't good, but you won't be disappointed because you're like, well, I'm trying to figure out how this loops into this and how this universe fits this and everything, you know?
Yeah, I don't got time for it. Well, I guess I got a final question to ask you.
Go for it.
Is Thor: Love and Thunder a movie you will sit down and watch when it gets on Disney Plus?
No. It was boring to me. It was more boring parts. I mean, this is probably the first movie, and I can't even remember how long, where I was in the theater and I wanted to, like, check my email on my phone. Because usually for me, I go to a movie, my phone is in my purse, and I watch it from the trailers to the end uninterrupted. And I was, like, fighting the urge to not just get on Twitter or check emails or something like that. And so for me, that lets me know I really was just not connecting with the movie. Like, I really just wanted to get either to another fight scene or kind of get to a Christian Bale scene or get to the end.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to sit through the whole movie when it gets on Disney Plus, but I would definitely, if I wanted to watch that last fight, like with all the kids, or when he's talking to Zeus and he kills him with the Thunderbolt, I thought that was pretty cool. But it's not something I'm gonna just wanna play. I wouldn't even want to play it in the background. I don't want to give him too many views.
And we've talked about doing a summer movie roundup where we get a few more movies under our belt. So far we've seen Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness. We've seen Jurassic World Dominion. We've seen Thor: Love and Thunder. This weekend we're going to go see Nope, but Jordan Peele's new movie. And so we're really excited to bring y'all kind of like a summer movie roundup, probably in August, I would guess.
Yeah,
August,
probably September. Late August, early September, do a blockbuster, summer blockbuster roundup. Yeah.
But so far, what my honest recommendation would be
Morbius.
we'll watch Morbius. My recommendation would be the last half of Doctor Strange. It's probably one of the most enjoyable thing we've seen in the theater this summer, followed by chunks of Jurassic World Dominion. Like the dinosaur action in this one was really good. The rest of it was stupid, like promising a dinosaur you will get their baby back. That was extremely dumb.
to have a joke in that movie about how dumb it is, it's like, right. Why do I even do it?
But the action pieces in that, I would watch that movie again. And I never thought I would say that. I wouldn't, and they're ready to hate it. I would watch that movie again.
I would definitely watch that one again. But hey, we'll say some of that for our big roundup summer blockbuster episode.
Just to compare, that's where I would say in terms of, you know, I haven't seen a movie this summer that I would say has blown my socks away that I thought was like, oh my gosh, an amazing movie. Like, I would pay to own this. But I would say Thor definitely falls on the bottom of that list. And that's saying a lot, I think, between Jurassic World Dominion being more exciting than Thor. Is that, I don't know. That's a disappointment to me.
Yeah, Thor just felt like a bunch of little gags throughout it. like a bunch of comics. Like it was like it felt more like a comic run, and you can tell where the issue ends and the next issue kind of begins, but it's like a different author each time and just continue on. It's weird place jokes, her tickling Thor when he's trying to communicate with the children. Yeah. Just odd place jokes throughout the movie. So
you know what it felt like to me now that you're saying that? It almost felt like it was trying to be a little bit of a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And of course there were some of them were in the beginning of this movie, but you know how it's definitely more comedy driven.
Yes.
It felt like it was trying to be like that. And I mean that's a part of why I found Guardians of the Galaxy 2 to be a little tiring, but I definitely think it was trying to be something that just should not be trying to be. So I agree with you.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully y'all agreed with us as y'all made it through the end.
Or maybe they didn't. And we would love to hear why.
Hear why. Go to all my cool places listed in the description, from Instagram to Twitter. Even the emails down there. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a follow. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast channel.
What movies do you want us to watch this summer? Because we also watch some stuff on streaming as well. So what do y'all want us to cover?
Made it sound so old. We watched the streaming as well. But thank y'all again, and make sure to check us out next time.